And a very good morning to you. Are you well? Are you well? Are you hale and hearty? Sunday morning, June 17th, 2018. I don't know what the weather is doing this morning. It's kind of dull, but the sun is trying to peek through the clouds. Bit cloudy, bit overcast, but it's still quite humid and it's supposed to clear up a bit later on. I hope it's fine where you are and I hope you're having a very, very nice weekend. And happy Father's Day, if that means anything to you. Right. Okay, this is Sunday View. Going to look through the Sunday newspapers, the front pages, a few stories inside, and we'll have a look at the big Sunday morning talk radio and talk television shows as well, the political shows. One or two interesting things coming out of those this morning. This is Sunday View. Tweet me now. It's at Richie Allen Show on Twitter to tell me what you're thinking about the stories making the news and the headlines today.
Asking the questions mainstream journalists will never ask. This is your Richie Allen Show on richieallen.co.uk, Fab Radio 2 in Manchester, and triggerwarning.tv.
Yeah, so do drop me a tweet. I like hearing from you. When those tweets come in, I will read them out. Fab Radio 2, triggerwarning.tv, richieallen.co.uk, and TuneIn Radio. Welcome to Sunday View. Thank you.
It's the Richie Allen Show, broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Yes, it feels very warm in the old studio with the big windows there looking out. We're not looking south, we're facing east. Yes, east. Hence, it's very sunny. We're facing east. Some interesting things to talk about getting rid of the music there. Some interesting things making the headlines today. You're going to be happy to know that there will be very little. In fact, there might not be any talk of Brexit today. Eh? That makes a nice change, doesn't it? Brexit will be mentioned. There's a lot of talk about money for the NHS today. And Brexit might get a mention there. But we're not going to talk about Brexit because I know you're sick of it. And there isn't so much of it in the newspapers today. Not a bad thing. Sunday, June 17th, 2018. Before I go anywhere, let me extend the warmest and the most heartfelt congratulations to Gareth and Gemma Ike. I should say Gemma and Gareth Ike, really. And congratulate them on the birth of their baby girl, Elora, who was born in the very small hours of Friday morning at a hospital in Derbyshire, I believe. Gareth Ike and Gemma was at their wedding with my partner, Caroline, a couple of years ago. And they were blessed on Friday morning with the birth of their first child, baby Elora. I understand Mum and baby are doing very well, and I wish them all the best. Very nice people. You couldn't meet nicer. So congratulations to Gareth Ike and to Gemma Ike, who did all the work, of course. What a nice Father's Day present that is, to become a father on Father's Day. Great stuff. Well done and good luck. As we say back home, may the road rise with you in your onward journey. Went to see Billy Joel at Old Trafford Soccer Stadium, Football Stadium, last night. Now, if you're a regular listener to this programme, you'll know that I go to see a lot of live concerts. One of the perks of being a commercial radio presenter for years is that you get to know a lot of people and you get a lot of complimentary stuff. So I go to see a lot of gigs because I get a lot of tickets. I pay for tickets as well at the best of times, but a lot of times I get tickets for free. It's just one of those things. Now, we happen to be big fans of Billy Joel. I play him on the programme, and the future Mrs. Allen is a massive fan of his. So we went to see him last night at Old Trafford. Thundery weather yesterday afternoon, but the forecast was spot on that it would clear up an hour or two before the concert, and that during the concert the weather would be fair. Look, leaving the concert aside, it was lovely. The music was lovely. Billy Joel was lovely. His backing band were amazing, including an Italian man who played the guitar and who sang Nessun Dorma, the Puccini opera song, sung famously by Luciano Pavarotti. This guy sang it amazingly well. He hit the high C at the conclusion of the song. Billy Joel was amazing. It was just fantastic. But you know, I'm getting a bit sick of going to concerts. And it's one of the few things in life that, outside of spending time with my beloved and our dog, it's one of the few things in life that gives me great pleasure. It's going to watch live bands, live singers, and across the genres. We don't care. We listen to anything. But the joy has gone out of it, folks, because we're living in a police state. And that's not for dramatic effect at all. We're living in a police state. It's becoming a horrendous experience now to get into a stadium or to get into an arena to see the artist or the group that you want to see, that you love, or whose music you've enjoyed growing up. You get to Old Trafford yesterday. So we parked just around the corner on the King's Road, which is near Old Trafford Cricket Stadium, which, as you know, or you might not know, is only down the road from the football stadium, down the Warwick Road and onto Sir Matt Busby Way. Police vans everywhere. It was the same when the Rolling Stones were in town. Police vans everywhere, causing a massive obstruction, meaning that a wide road now becomes a very, very narrow road. And it backs up queues of people right back to the Old Trafford tram station, which is next to the cricket ground. So you have a huge obstruction. You're surrounded by cops in military-style uniforms, not looking like cops, as we understand. Let's use the word police then. Cops is not a good word. Not looking like police as we understand the police to look. Military-grade uniforms, Kevlar, semi-automatic weapons and guns. And then you have people in megaphones screaming at you. Like literally screaming in your face. Telling you where to go and what to do. You have women being told that standard handbags are not allowed into the stadium. They have to be left outside the stadium at bag drops, causing even more confusion. Worse still, anybody attending the concert was given an email a couple of days before that women could bring a handbag so long as the dimensions of the handbag were about the size of an A5 sheet of paper. So we see women with bags that do conform to the A5 sheet of paper rule, being told, no, 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 you can't go in to the stadium. You're going to have to drop the bag off outside the stadium. Now, this is a stadium that holds 76,000 people. It's not a club. So you can't just give the bag to somebody with your coat, get a ticket like you would do in a club. This is a stadium. So the bag drops are far away from the inner sanctum of the stadium. People have been screamed at, women. People being forced to queue outside the stadium for ages and ages. Then being patted down and frisked by security guards. Many of whom are telling these women, again with the ordinary handbags, no, you're going to have to go all the way back there now and drop it off. And this got so bad, this, that thousands of people didn't get in to see the very start of the show, which begun at 8 o'clock. They were still streaming in. And it's not the case that they were outside getting pissed. You can't get pissed outside. There are no places to buy alcohol outside the stadium. So they were coming in, rushing in because they were being kept back, roared at, forced through narrow corridors blocked off by police vans with Robocop police people. And the Manchester Evening News this morning ran a rave review of the show, which is a lovey fest, by a reporter. And the show itself is terrific. But by the time the headline act gets to the stage, there was no support act last night. I'm noticing increasingly, and all my life, I've gone to watch live artists indoors, outdoors, all my adult life. It's what I do for fun. What we're seeing is, inside the stadium, increased tension amongst people. And we saw fights break out at Billy Joel last night. We saw fights break out at the Rolling Stones. 6 months ago, there was a major fight on the floor of the Jamiroquai concert in the arena. Because when people go through all of this hateful shit, by the time they get into the show and by the time the show starts, they're so on edge, they're so wound up, that the slightest thing will trigger them off, treating people like animals. So in the Manchester Evening News today, oh, it's wonderful. Wonderful. Billy Joel was wonderful. But they don't have the balls to report on what's happening. We have a visual police state all around us. And to see it in operation, you've only got to attend an event. Doesn't have to be something on the scale of a Billy Joel show. It can be something where a park is sectioned off for a festival. It can be anything. You're surrounded by hostile, horrible police officers who look like the army. And then, if that isn't bad enough, you're harassed and jostled and shouted at by fucking goons wearing high-vis jackets working for ShowSec or G4S or something like that. Welcome to Planet Fucking Dystopia. I just came here, mate, to watch some Billy Joel, to sing She's Always a Woman to Me and Piano Man, and cry like a big emotional fucking idiot when he's singing Piano Man, like all the other blokes crying. Have a bit of fun, bit of emotion. No, you're going to be forced into a police state, security zone. You're going to be harassed, harried, fucking screamed at, patted down, roared at, until by the time you get to take your seat, you're actually saying to yourself, I'd rather be at home now. And that's my review of the Billy Joel concert. And I'm a simple man. I'm not extravagant. I'm a man of simple pleasures. Going to a concert now in the police state has become a chore, not something to be enjoyed anymore. An inconvenience. Right, I've gotten that off my chest. Let me start with the Sunday Observer. This is the biggest story of the day today. And it's covered in all the newspapers. And the morning talk shows are full of commentary on this story. The Sunday Observer headline is, May to unveil £20 billion a year to boost NHS spending. Taxpayers are being asked to help fund a £20 billion a year injection of extra cash into the National Health Service by 2023-2024, that will pay for thousands more doctors and nurses while at the same time cutting cancer deaths and improving mental health services. That's according to the Prime Minister, Theresa May. The announcement has been made on the eve of the NHS's 70th birthday. The birthday is next month. Will represent the biggest funding boost since Gordon Brown imposed a 1% point rise in national insurance to pay for more NHS spending in his 2002 budget. Government sources said the increases, which would be paid for in part by a Brexit dividend, would amount to around £600 million a week extra for the NHS in cash terms within the next 6 years. Health and Social Care Secretary Jeremy Hunt said last night the government wanted to show the world what a cutting-edge 21st century healthcare system can look like. Okay? Details of how the public will be required to pay through tax rises and the proportion of the funding increases they will pay for won't be spelled out until the autumn budget because of arguments between the Chancellor, Philip Hammond, Jeremy Hunt, the Health Secretary, and Downing Street itself. Now listen to this. It is understood that a freeze on tax thresholds is being considered as one option to pay for up to £10 billion of the extra annual cash injection. So when they campaigned before the last general election last year, the Tory party, they campaigned on a promise that there would be no tax rises for working class people, middle income earners in this country. That was one of the central promises. But the Observer says it's going to be a big U-turn because they are going to raise the tax-free threshold. The threshold is the point at which you start paying tax, right? Theresa May also said that extra borrowing would be involved. Now, before we hear from Theresa May, I want to talk about borrowing just very briefly. Because I got into this with the economist Steve Keen, the renowned economist Steve Keen, on a programme about 2 weeks ago on why any sovereign government would borrow money to pay for its business to pay for government programs. And I want you to listen carefully to what the economist Steve Keen said to me, something which I've been talking about for many, many years on my programs, and something which, until recently, had been labelled as conspiracy theory. Borrowing money at interest, creating debt to pay for government programs, to pay basically for running the country. This is me speaking with Steve Keen 2 weeks ago. His microphone is slightly echoey, but you'll hear clearly what it is he's saying. So why the austerity to, why screw people to the wall to pay back a debt that doesn't need to be paid back then?
For the same reason people used to worry about epicycles and things like that. It's an understanding how the world operates, which is plausible and fundamentally wrong. There's no necessity for the government to even issue a bond to finance its own operations, so long as the money issued by a central bank is accepted as money in its realm. And, of course, people have to accept the pound when it's tended to buy anything anywhere in the UK. So what people have done is they've used an analogy about what it would be like if a household was spending more than it got back and apply that to an entire country. Now, that is completely the wrong frame of reference. It's like trying to understand the solar system by assuming Earth is the centre and the sun and the moon and stars revolve around us. It's going to be a neat, plausible and totally wrong theory of how the universe operates. The same story about saying the government is like a household. If it's like a household, where's your central bank?
Yeah, let me go all
the wrong analogy.
Let me go all conspiratorial on you then, just for the last 90 seconds or so, right? Because I love this. So the result of this lunacy then that we're talking about is the sale of everything of any real value to massive corporations and private interests. So you don't have to be Lieutenant Columbo to realise that this system is enforced by those who want to transfer real wealth, real assets into the hands of a tiny few.
That is one way to interpret it, and it's not
right.
I'm not going to jump on it as a conspiracy theory. It doesn't make sense, but the conspiracy
theory
does
right?
make sense.
Yeah,
but it's a plausible fallacy, which is useful for those who want to take over privately owned assets and make them privately owned.
He said to me, "For once, I'm not going to jump on this as a conspiracy theory that doesn't make sense, because it does make sense and it does benefit those who want to privatise public assets." That's the government, the elected government of a sovereign nation, borrowing to pay for its programme of government. And just to reiterate this, and most people still don't understand this, rather than, I've said 1,000 times over the years, rather than beat people over the head with 9/11, you know, and JFK and everything else, this is how you get through to people, the level of tyranny. He reiterates it right here.
There's no necessity for the government to even issue a bond to finance its own operations, so long as the money issued by a central bank is accepted as money in its realm. And, of course, people have to accept the pound when it's tended to buy anything anywhere in the UK.
Just in case you missed it.
There's no necessity for the government to even issue a bond to finance its own operations, so long.
There's no necessity for the government to give initial bonds to finance, to basically finance government, to finance its own operations, he said. That's it right there, you see. That's the heart of it. That's the debt slavery. And I'm not going to labour the point, but it's important, right? And this is the real stuff, this. Get out of the alt-right, alt-left, you know. This is it. So, back to Theresa May and $20 billion for the NHS. All the papers covering this today. The Sunday Telegraph headline is NHS to get extra 330... Jesus, Richie. NHS to get extra £384 million per week. The Sunday Telegraph says the boost will partly draw from the Brexit dividend that will come about from the UK ceasing payments to the EU. Taxes will increase. Number 10 tells the paper the funding equates to £384 million per week in real terms and £600 million per week in cash terms. So what's going on? Now, you've heard me talk about Beth Rigby before. I have a lot of time for Beth Rigby. I've been a journalist for a long time. There aren't too many these days in commercial media that you can admire, but I admire Beth. She's a rare breed in national media, cuts through the bullshit and the spin. And here is Beth Rigby's take on Theresa May's announcement of £20 billion over the next 6 years for the NHS. Beth Rigby.
In terms of the money and how it's funded, Theresa May very keen this morning to imply this is somehow a Brexit dividend. I have to tell you, that's simply not correct. The Brexit money that we will get back from the EU after we leave the European Union, it's all tied up until at least 2023-24. That's because we have to pay an EU divorce bill to the tune of £40 billion. But also, the government have promised sectors in our society, such as farmers, that after Brexit, money that they got from the EU, they will still get from the UK coffers. So some of that Brexit dividend that we expect is already being paid to different groups or earmarked for other people. So where does this NHS money come from? Well, it's a 3.3% increase. It's £20 billion, as you say. And the only way it's going to come is from general taxation or borrowing. Now, in the government's manifesto, the Tory manifesto, they promised not to increase taxes. So it looks like it's going to have to come from increased borrowing. And the person who's going to have to find the money will be Philip Hammond. So we won't get really a sense of where the money's really coming from until the November budget, which gives Theresa May all of 6 months to bake in this idea that somehow it's a Brexit dividend, because politically that's certainly what she would like to do, given what was on the side of that bus in the Vote Leave campaign. And we remember it all very well, and indeed many people voted to leave the EU on the basis that Theresa May would find more money for the NHS. So she is finding more money for the NHS, but don't be under any illusion that this is a Brexit dividend. It's not. So that's the money.
Great stuff from Beth Rigby. It's lies from May. When you agree to give a massive... look, I said we wouldn't be talking Brexit, and we're not. But just to say on that point, right, we are, I suppose, just for a couple of seconds. On that point, May saying money we would have been paying in, we'll give it to the NHS. She's lying through her teeth, because as part of negotiating the country out of the European Union, she gave the go-ahead to David Davis to agree a divorce settlement bill in the region of £40 billion. So it's lies. Beth Rigby's very good. So May herself was on the Andrew Marr show earlier, the Prime Minister Theresa May. What about the claims made by Beth Rigby? Here's Theresa May with Andrew Marr.
From your point of view, this is a real Brexit dividend which can now be spent on the NHS.
Yes, and I look at it in very simple terms. At the moment, as a member of the European Union, every year we send significant amounts of money into the... spend significant amounts of money on our subscription, if you like, to the EU. When we leave, we won't be doing that.
So the question
is timing,
isn't it?
It's right that we use that money to spend on our priorities, and the NHS is our number one priority.
Absolutely, but the question is timing, because you are spending, if I may say so, more than £40 billion of our money on the price of leaving the EU.
Marvellous.
And that's money that's going out of this country. So the question is, at what point does the tap reverse, as it were, and we start to get a net income flowing in? Because, you know, you're announcing this money now, but there's no Brexit income yet, is there?
Well, we haven't left the EU
exactly,
yet, and we'll be leaving the EU on the 29th of March, 2019. Yeah. As you know, there'll then be an implementation period.
It's the biggest load of lies of all time, that we'll be leaving the EU at the end of March next year. It's the greatest lie ever told. She knows that we're not leaving the European Union. Even if next March they have a big day of celebrations and they say we've left, they're lying through their teeth, because they're tied into implementation periods for both sides to get used to the new arrangements until the end of 2020. That'll be December 31st, 2020, at the very least. Liars. Liars, right.
...period to end December 2020. The figure that you quote about the amount of money that's been was agreed last December as the financial settlement is about money that is part of what we would have been paying to... We signed up to the EU to pay over a particular period of time, because I said to the other leaders that for this budget plan period in the European Union, which ends in 2020, actually they shouldn't worry that our leaving was going to cause them to have to pay more
or see less. So after
2020,
the money will start to flow back in the other direction.
Well,
that is the clear indication.
The timing, one of the issues that was left open when we agreed the sum was the timing.
You see, Andrew Marr has just caught her out in a whopper of a lie there. She talked about from the end of March 2019, this money being available over a six-year period. She's lying because, as Mar pointed out, it won't be for at least a year after that. December 31st, 2020.
There's a certain expectation.
So she's mumbling there and stuttering and making a complete balls, as we would say, back in the old country, of justifying what she'd previously said to him.
Over the time profile of that spending.
Certain number of crossed fingers will be, in all of this.
It's not crossed fingers. These would be issues that will be finalised when we put the actual withdrawal agreement together into a legal treaty.
How do you know a politician is lying? You know the answer. So what about borrowing then? What about borrowing? Beth Rigby, Sky News, said the government promised no income tax increase, so it's going to have to be borrowed. What about the borrowing?
And you've also said several times that the rest of us, as it will have to make our contribution to this payment as well. It's been suggested this will be done through some general tax rise, either through freezing tax thresholds or something like that. Will it also require extra borrowing?
Well, if you look at what we've been able to do as a country so far in terms of putting more money into the NHS...
At this point, Mar should stop her and say, listen, I asked you a very simple question. Will we be borrowing more money from the Central Bank of England? Or will we not be? Stop telling me about what you've been able to do, you daft bint. Yes or no?
Yes, because we've taken a balanced approach in our economy, we've been able to do that. As we look to the future, as I say, there will be this Brexit dividend. We will be contributing more as a country. But there are many aspects that... and the Chancellor will announce the details in June.
Will we be borrowing, I asked you. I asked you, will you be borrowing any more money to pay for this? Stop waffling. Just tell me, will we be borrowing?
In due course and before the spending review. But there are many aspects, of course, that will change over the next few months, potentially, in terms of we'll be looking at economic growth and at other issues.
All right. The other big part of this...
It's not all right, Andrew. You jug-eared muppet. You asked her, would they be borrowing anymore? She didn't answer it and then you moved on. Christ, man.
This, something that you got into a bit of trouble with during the election campaign, is social care. I mean, it's been suggested that we have to spend more money on social care and have to find a new way of funding social care. And after the election, you said you were onto that. How closely have you got to an answer?
Well, we'll be publishing a green paper in due course on social care, but it is...
Basically, we'll be publishing a paper on social care in the future. None of this money, she said, will be going to social care. This 20 billion is only going to the NHS. There won't be any money going to social care in the long term because they want people dependent on the state, people who've paid national insurance, which is social security in the United States, if you're listening in the US. They want people who worked like beavers, like ants, like drones all their lives. They want them to just fuck off and die when you have ceased becoming a productive member of society. You're not a worker bee anymore. There's not going to be any social care. You should just fuck off and die. Is effectively what they want. They don't care about social care or anything like it. You know, and as I think some of our listeners have been tweeting, they ultimately want to hand social care or the responsibility for social care over to private industry and companies like Virgin, which we've seen and talked about on this programme anyway. Absolute balderdash. But it's great for Theresa May because... You know, we can wait now till the autumn budget. She can put that to bed for the summer, but who knows whether she'd even be in a job by the autumn. Now, just to end this, because it is the biggest story of the day, and I don't want to spend too much time on it, but obviously the NHS is the issue. You often hear in America, the economy's stupid. It's always the NHS in this country, quite rightly, because people depend on it. The worst off amongst us, people in low-income jobs, people who can barely get to the end of the month and pay rent and pay bills, they always know, at least they always believe, that if anything happens to me, I won't have to worry about astronomical medical bills because I have the National Health Service free at the point of use, at the point of necessity. What does Labour say about this? Emily Thornberry is the Shadow Foreign Secretary. She was on with Andrew Marr as well. What are her thoughts on this new promise of a Brexit dividend, £20 billion for the NHS?
Yeah, I mean, I'd certainly welcome it if we could believe it. Let's see if we...
Oh, you don't believe it?
Well, let's see what they deliver. They how are they going to pay for it? So they say that they're going to increase taxes, but we've yet to hear who's going to get their taxes increased and how. They say they're going to increase borrowing, but they haven't told us by how much, and they haven't told us what the effect will be. They've told us that they're going to pay for it from a Brexit dividend. We don't really know what that means because we don't know what the deal is going to be and what the overall effect on the economy is going to be, and actually whether Brexit is going to end up costing us a great deal of money or whether we can strike the sort of deal that would actually do us some good.
So lots of pertinent questions. Lots of pertinent questions.
And we've got another 15 on top that we've
As we sit
overnight.
Here, in mid-June 2018, which party is promising more for the NHS, the Tories or Labour?
I think that people are not fooled. I think that they saw in the Tory manifesto last year whole load of promises, but none of them were costed. Well, and that's what brings me back to costings.
But which because one, Tory or Labour?
Well, because our manifesto actually had these things costed. So we said that we would spend an extra £7 billion and we would do that by stopping the cuts to corporation tax. So we meant it.
Liar. She's another liar. £7 billion, they said in their manifesto. But she told a lie there that Andrew Marr didn't jump on. She said this money would be raised by not allowing corporations to avoid corporation tax. She's a liar. She's a liar. It's not all about generating $7 billion solely through corporation tax. Labour has put spending plans of over a billion, well over a billion, might even be several billion pounds. I'll have to double check that. But they're going to borrow billions effectively, which is a road that ends in genocide. Yes, genocide. Because austerity brings genocide to the sick, to the disabled, to the those with learning disabilities, and then people who just can't get work and who end up in 0 hours contracts or low income jobs. That's what austerity does. Kills these people off. Borrowing is the beginning of the road that ends in austerity. We'll borrow at a serious debt from the Central Bank of England. Later on, we'll tell the people of the country, you lived beyond your means. Now we're going to have to tax you out of existence and we're going to have to cut funding to all these vital public services. That's what happens. And Thornbury knows this, you see. But she's as bad or worse than Theresa May. Steve Keen again, just in case you didn't get this.
There's no necessity for the government to even issue bonds to finance its own operations.
There's no need for a government to give bonds. Giving a bond basically is basically an IOU. A bond is basically a loan. It's the government exchanging a bond for a loan. Basically, there's no need for a government to borrow to pay for its own operations. Why does it do that? This is the question you need to ask people. Don't talk about 9/11. Don't talk about anything else. Get them thinking about the creation of money. That's where it all begins. It's 27 and a half minutes to the top of the hour. I should have taken a break a while ago. I better do it now. This is Sunday View. Back with them. We're going to talk cannabis oil. And we're going to talk Billy Caldwell and his mum Charlotte in a minute after this. Loads of tweets, by the way. Thanks for them. I will read some when we come back.
Introducing the H2O app, a powerful water structuring application that programs vibrational energies into water through the use of different sound frequencies. Once programmed, the use of water for drinking, cooking, bathing. Give it to your friends and colleagues or spread it around the garden. The list goes on. It's not just water that the app can be used for either. It's great for programming crystals too. The H2O app is free to download and is available on both Android and Apple platforms. For further information, go to h2oapp.online.
Have you lost access to important data from a computer hard drive, mobile phone, or other storage device? Maybe you have a broken hard drive containing years of information, or a smartphone that no longer works from which you'd like the pictures, movies, and chats recovered. If you would like to recover data from any type of digital device, including desktop and laptop computers, external hard drives, cameras, smartphones, NAS, and RAID servers, then contact Data Clinic today at dataclinic.co.uk now.
There's a place high in the mountains of Spain, a sanctuary where souls gather from all around the globe to learn about themselves and experience powerful changes in the way we see our world. they become awakened to their gifts and their power to heal others. Become part of this ever-growing worldwide family of unique, pure energy healing practitioners. Discover how amazing you truly are. Go to www.markbajerski.com. It could just change your life forever. Forever.
The Richie Allen Show relies on your support. Go to richieallen.co.uk and set up a monthly donation today.
Welcome back to Sunday View. Good to be with you. It really is. Thanks for joining the program. Good morning to Gordy. How you doing, Gordy? Thanks for sending me that Guardian story about Billy Caldwell. Going to talk about that in a second. Hi to Cherise Burchett. How you doing, Cherise? To Alan Condon, to Spirit Samba, to Mwinga as well. Thanks for all the memes, Mwinga. Theresa May has a disease. It's called liabetes. That's a gif. Yeah. It's catching too. Good morning to Feathers Arrows. Would like to see Theresa May on this programme. That would be a classic. You know, you'd never be rude. And I've interviewed in my, obviously in my commercial media days, I have interviewed very senior politicians. In fact, I interviewed David Cameron when I was in Spain, before he became Prime Minister, obviously. It was when Gordon Brown was Prime Minister. I interviewed David Cameron in a 15-minute interview, and it was for a commercial radio station in Spain. Because of that, I was very limited in the questions I could put to him. The questions had to be about issues related to expats in Spain, if you understand. So I couldn't get into areas of foreign policy and stuff like that. So, you know, it's a waste of time, really, with these people, you know. Hi to Gail. Good morning, Gail. Good morning, Dean, who says, Richie, I had to become the lasting power of attorney for my dad when he was diagnosed with dementia. This was to stop them taking my mother's side of the house to pay for his care. You work all your life, and when you need help in your last years, they come and take your wealth, says Dean. Incredible. Good morning. Thanks, Dean. Good morning, Ricky Emmett. Good morning, David. Has anyone, Richie, noticed the health programmes on the minor BBC channels promoting holistic healing? A sure sign, tweets David. They know most people won't get the new NHS as it will be privately run. That's David Stanford there. Loads of tweets coming in. Keep them coming in to see what others are tweeting me. Tweet. Go to twitter.com, where it says search Twitter, put Richie Allen Show, all one word, press enter, and you'll see what people are telling me. Tiger Johnson tweets, there are no moral, ethical, legal or medical arguments to support the prohibition of medicinal marijuana, says Tiger. Thank you, Tiger. I don't think, mate, you'll get an argument here today. So let's cover that story then. We'll hear from Charlotte Caldwell, Billy's mother, in a moment, because she spoke with Sky News earlier, and I did manage to get some of that audio for you. On the front page of the Sunday Telegraph, government to review medical cannabis after Javid ruling. So Sajid Javid deserves, I suppose, to give him a bit of credit, deserves a bit of a slap on the back today. The government is considering reviewing laws on the use of medicinal cannabis after Sajid Javid, the Home Secretary, intervened to help treat a chronically ill boy suffering life-threatening fits. Javid took the unusual step of licensing a batch of cannabis oil, which is illegal in the UK, to treat Billy Caldwell, who's 12 and suffers from violent epileptic episodes. His mother, Charlotte, had a batch of the medicine seized by the Home Office last week. In a decision Ms. Caldwell hailed as historic, the consignment of the drug, which she had brought from Canada but was then confiscated at Heathrow Airport, was returned for doctors to administer to her son. Now, that's not true. It's partly true. Some of the batch that was seized at Heathrow has been given to Billy's doctors, and Billy has been taking it since yesterday, but not all of it. Not all of it. There's still several months' stash of the medicine in the custody, I suppose, of customs officers. Okay. But, again, not to ignore the part played by Sajid Javid here. Charlotte Caldwell, Billy's mother, as I just mentioned, was on Sky News today. And here's what she said. Have a listen. She's an interesting lady.
Billy is improving this morning. He was up early and he's had some food this morning. He's had some porridge and some fruit, which I'm delighted to report on. So there's an improvement this morning.
So is that as a direct result of the medicinal cannabis, this cannabis oil?
Well, he had his first dose yesterday at 2 o'clock, 2:30 in the afternoon, and he had his bedtime dose last night. It remains to be seen. I don't want to in any way declare that Billy's medicine is a miracle, that you take it one day and the next day you're up and about, because that's would be an extremely dangerous thing for me to do, considering the nature of his condition, which is drug-resistant epilepsy. But what I would say is that it's definitely a medication, prescribed as an anti-epileptic medication. It's definitely controlling his seizures.
So you have seen improvements with its use?
Yes. And what, you know, the amazing thing about this is he's under clinical supervision in the hospital. So the medically trained staff are actually witnessing as well this morning the improvement in Billy.
Very interesting, isn't it? I wonder what the reaction among the consultants is, the medical consultants treating Billy. They're witnessing this dramatic effect, and they're witnessing even this very dramatic improvement on the part of Billy. So they must be talking amongst themselves. Wow, it really does work. It's, you know, having a huge impact in terms of it's reducing the seizures. And he's getting better. So the presenter, Stephen Dixon, then asked Charlotte, is there maybe a problem in that people can't separate the recreational use of cannabis from the medicinal properties?
For me, as a mummy, you see, you know, you can look at cannabis in two ways. Whether, you know, there's the recreational side of it, which is for me a separate debate.
Yeah.
And what I had was a medicine. And there's a massive difference. There's a red line here.
You see, that's interesting, though, isn't it? Because, I mean, this is what it boils down to. You say, yes, it should be a separate debate. And I think most people watching will think, yes, it should be a separate debate. But it's not, is it? It's all being linked together.
Yes, yes. But, you know, it's. I think in this particular instance, we are now at a point in our country where this little boy, my son Billy, I think has proven without a doubt that this is a medicine. And for me, I'm absolutely, you know, it's amazing that he's now using this medicine under clinical supervision because the clinicians and the medical staff on the NHS, truly amazing people, are behind us. So they're witnessing firsthand, and there's reports now. You know, every hour they're reporting on Billy. And so this is our time now to actually have a full review. I would be calling this morning on the Home Secretary and the Health Secretary to meet with myself, Dr. Dan Poulter, Crispin Blunt. Steve Moore,
MPs who've supported
you. Yes, and Steve Moore and his team, and we need an urgent review. I do not want another mother or another child to endure what we have endured this week. More so, Billy. There is no mother should have the medicine of her child confiscated without a full medical assessment.
It's madness to me. There's another story in the Sunday Mail today about another mother going through it. It's a lady called Jen Smale, and she's got a boy called Oliver, Oliver Smale. Oliver is 11, and he was getting about 20 very serious seizures a day. Can you imagine dealing with that? It must be horrendous. But they began to be less frequent when he started taking drops of cannabis oil. Again, you know, it's right there. But she's been told by her doctors that he has to stop taking the cannabis oil, because if he doesn't, they won't be in a position to prescribe him any new anti-epileptic drugs. That's an interesting story in the Mail on Sunday. it's easy for me to sit here and say this because I'm not the boy's mother, but I would be inclined very, very, very politely and very respectfully to say to the NHS consultants, well, the cannabis oil is reducing his seizures. I'd rather continue to pursue the path of giving him the cannabis oil and not worry so much about the pharma manufactured anti-epileptic drugs. So respectfully, you're saying to me you can't help him anymore unless I stop giving him the oil, but the oil is working, so I'll use the oil. This is the story that's in the Mail on Sunday today. Jen Smale: the frequency and severity of his fits have dropped sharply because of the cannabis oil, yet the NHS are saying you better stop taking the oil or we won't give you any more prescriptions of other drugs. So you have two different stories there. Moving on, the Mail on Sunday's front page, speaking of the Mail, Mays, £20 billion NHS gamble. We're not going to talk about that again. The Sunday Express, I told you it was everywhere today. Sunday Express headline, £600 million a week Brexit bonus for the National Health Service. Again, we're not going to get into that. But here's a very interesting story. And I've talked in recent weeks with former police officer Peter Kirkham about what's happening to the police force and the police service right across the country because of cuts to it. The Sunday Times is a brilliant piece of investigative journalism today. Got to give them credit when it's due. The headline on the front page is, under 5% of all burglaries and robberies solved. Under 5% of all burglaries and robberies solved. A crisis in the nation's policing is exposed this weekend by figures that reveal fewer than 5% of street robberies and burglaries are being solved. The proportion of suspects who are caught and punished for all crimes is more than halved over the past 5 years to just 9%. This is official police data. The Metropolitan Police admitted this weekend that it solved less than 4% of all domestic burglaries in London in the year to April. Police forces that have some of the highest detection rates say the traditional bobby on the beat plays a crucial role in solving crime. But the traditional bobby on the beat has basically disappeared off of our streets and out of our communities. So the Times today has a brilliant feature for UK, obviously for UK readers. You can put your postcode in and it will give you the crime statistics for your own neighbourhood. So I put my postcode in. I'm in South Manchester. And it told me that there were 413 crimes recorded in 2017. There'd have been a million if I'd have reported a future Mrs. Allen's cooking. Fucking crimes against humanity, but I'm not going to go down that road. So 413 crimes recorded in 2017. Nine were solved. Nine! Nine! What the fuck? Inspector Clouseau must be on the beat here. 413 crimes, nine were solved in a year. 2%. I had to get a calculator to do that. 2% in this area, this little neighbourhood in the south of the city. Unbelievable! And the Sunday Times goes on to write, the decline in detection rates will raise concerns. Police are struggling to protect the public. You don't fucking say, do you? With the number of officers in England and Wales at the lowest level since the late 1980s, Peter Kirkham, former Met detective, on this programme said it time and again. On Sky News, said it time and again. No officers on the beat. And the ones who are working, if they speak to somebody for bad behaviour and they have to issue them a caution, they've then got to go back to the station and spend hours on paperwork, so they're off the beat. Marvellous. This all began under Blair, by the way. It really began under Blair. Privatisation, that's what it's all about. Destroy the service, create the outcry, offer the solution, which is, well, let's have a public-private partnership for policing. And some of those goons that were at the Billy Joel concert last night, let's give them some traditional police responsibilities. Why not? Let's get them patrolling in communities. Thugs, goons. Brilliant. Mad story. Here's a story. Holy shit. HPV jabs, that's human papillomavirus jabs, will be offered to thousands of teen boys on the NHS as well as girls to protect against deadly cancer virus. Boys will now be offered the HPV vaccine for the first time in Britain. Previously, only girls were given it. Experts revealed, don't you love experts? Name them. Name these people. Experts revealed HPV kills far more men than originally thought. 650 a year. Christ. More than 400,000 boys will now be protected each year from getting the virus. Hundreds of thousands of teenage boys will be given a life-saving vaccine. What a load of crap. Health Secretary Jeremy Hunt will give the go-ahead for them to be inoculated against the cancer-causing human papillomavirus. And the Sunday Mail is claiming responsibility for this. The Mail on Sunday is saying it's our campaign that pressured the government into now introducing a toxic tidal wave of shit into the bodies of hundreds of thousands of boys who don't need it. Right? They've been given this to girls since 2008 to help them prevent cervical cancer, which really doesn't kill anybody. They say it kills about 1,000 women. That's bullshit anyway. But when you factor in the amount of women aged between 80 and 60 in the country, then do the percentages and all of that. Again, women have more chance of being killed by a falling piano than being killed by cervical cancer. Right? Right. 400,000 boys. I'm going to say this now, and I have done my research, and the research is sound. Dear listener, the research is sound, I tell you. This is one of the greatest medical lies of the last 50 years. That this vaccine is necessary. It is one of the greatest, most monstrous lies told by the medical industry in the last 5.5 decades. Because they knew back in the 1950s that there was a solid link between high levels of cervical cancer and promiscuity. Promiscuity. And in the 1980s, peer-reviewed papers published, endorsed around the world by Harald Zurhausen of Germany and Ralph Reichart of Columbia University. These guys proved that HPV was a big factor in cervical cancer. And taking the baton up, a guy called Dr. Jose Azucar agreed with them and did exhaustive experiments and demonstrated conclusively in the 1980s, wait for this, that cervical cancer is a sexually transmitted disease, that the virus is, the HPV is the most important factor causing it, and that promiscuity is the means to getting the infection. You're most likely to get the infection through promiscuity. Fact. Peer-reviewed, rubber-stamped by the medical fraternity. Right? Sexually transmitted disease, most prevalent in the promiscuous. And most prevalent in women that have lots of babies. Not saying there's anything wrong with having lots of babies. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with promiscuity either. Do whatever you want. Promiscuity. Your children do not need the HPV vaccine. Their chances of getting, let alone dying from cervical cancer, are astronomical. Even if they are. Even if they do turn into Ron Jeremy. Or Lola Ferrari, showing my age now, and shagging everybody around them. So you have these peer-reviewed studies, rubber-stamped, HPV, sexually transmitted disease, promiscuity. That had to be destroyed. It had to be destroyed. So the vax manufacturers, in the form of Merck, did everything they could to discredit the sound science, because billions and billions of pounds are at stake, but more at stake, because it serves another agenda, right, which I won't get into now. So 7 years ago, researchers at Kaiser Permanente and Emory University in Atlanta, they said, wait for it, HPV vaccine is not linked to sexual promiscuity in girls. We don't agree with all the other studies that went before us. So four people worked on it, four researchers, and they said the study wasn't funded externally. They said, we did this research by ourselves and we found that the vaccine is not linked to sexual promiscuity in girls, or the HPV virus is not linked, to sexual promiscuity in girls. And nobody gave us any money, they said. But three out of the four researchers admitted to having received extensive funding by Merck for other projects that they worked on. And in case you don't know, Merck makes the HPV even vaccine in the United States. Three of these bastards had a relationship with Merck when they produced a paper. Jesus, Richie. They produced a paper. This makes me angry. This level of corruption and filth and sleaze. We had 50 years of research. They said HPV can cause cervical cancer, but you're only likely to get the virus through promiscuity. It's the most likely way you get it. Right, so teach your children to behave themselves then when they're going out in their formative years. You don't need to give them the vaccine. So Merck had to stop that. So these four useful idiots give this paper. It's endorsed by the National Health Service, by the way, back in 2012. And they start rolling out the vaccines for girls and in Ireland. And in Ireland, it's turning them into zombies. It's destroying their health. Madness. And you know what makes me really pissed off? We learned only a couple of years ago that women can accurately and easily test themselves for the virus, for the infection. And that came through the Journal of Clinical Microbiology. There's something called the Delphi screener. It's a little sterile self-sampling device like a syringe. You can take a sample, you can send it off to a lab. Costs sod all money. You can test yourself. There's no need for the vaccine. There's no need to vaccinate hundreds and hundreds of thousands of teenagers with this toxic wave of tidal fucking shit that could do to them what it's done to the girls in Ireland. So ask yourself why. When there's no need for it, ask yourselves why. Eh? Right. That's nearly the end of the programme. Unbelievable, isn't it? Unbelievable to be giving voice to boys, to roll this out for boys on the National Health Service and to say, we're going to get 500,000 boys and stick them with this shit. What is it going to do to them? All I can tell you is, I'm not a doctor. I'm not a scientist. I am a journalist. I'm an analyst. I've learned to quickly read volumes and volumes of reports and texts and to pick out the salient points. I have no medical training. Take what I say with a pinch of salt, by all means. But my advice to you would be, and again, remember, I'm a layman. I'm no medical expert. Do not give that injection to your son or your daughter. No matter how much the school or the local authorities or whomever say you should give it. There's no need for it. They don't need it. Full stop. Ah, be Jesus. Ah. Oh my God. It's mental, isn't it? We're living in a mad world. I'm going to leave you and love you. I've got a fantastic show lined up for you tomorrow. Shane Gibbs is going to join the show. We're going to talk about targeting of individuals by the state and by local law enforcement officers. You've never heard a story like it. A really interesting man. Shane Gibbs joins the programme tomorrow. Join me at 7 p.m. UK time. I'll have a full roundup of the news as well and more besides. This is your Richie Allen Show, Fab Radio 2. Check out fabradiointernational.com, triggerwarning.tv, and stay in touch with this programme through the website richieallen.co.uk. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday. Look after yourselves and one another. See you tomorrow at 7. Bye now. Have a good one. Bye.
Tonic and gin.